Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The University of South Florida and Pasco County have partnered up to bring a new outdoor forensic training facility to Florida, just north of Tampa. In forensic parlance, these kinds of facilities are called body farms. It's where scientists place or bury cadavers that were donated to science and then wait and watch as the body decomposes. They catalog variations in different environmental settings and then use that information to guide investigations when bodies are found in less controlled circumstances. Joining us in the studio to talk about the new Florida facility is FGCU professor and forensic scientist Dr. Heather Walsh Haney, who has lent her expertise to popular shows on forensics like CSI and Bones. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
We're talking about a body farm, the first one in the state of Florida and one of only nine in the United States. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, Dr. Walsh Haney, tell me, what is forensics, just to give us an umbrella overview?
Forensics literally means to debate. So when we pass that on or connect it to the field of science, it means bringing our scientific findings into the court of law. And for us, that tends to be related to criminal investigations for death, things like that.
So then how does a body farm help inform the science of forensics?
Well, one of the most important aspects of the research that comes out of a body farm is to exonerate the innocent who've been tied to a scene based upon estimations of time since death from other locations like Tennessee or Texas, and also making sure that the timeline, when we know we have the perpetrator, that we can look at the timeline and match up primary, secondary, and tertiary, perhaps locations of a crime based upon those data that we get in a controlled environment of a body farm.
Okay, so the main thing that the body farm kind of applies is with timing.
Absolutely.
That's the key element that you're proving or disproving.
Right. So estimating time since death based upon the colonization of insects, plants, and animals that feed on human remains and the byproducts of decomposition.
Yeah, the scavengers are a big deal too.
They are, especially in Florida. We have everything from feral dogs to coyote to turkey vultures, black vultures, possum, alligator, bobcat, domestic cat, you name it, they're all coming to those remains.
Yeah. So when did scientists first start looking into studying the decomposition of people?
Well, it really took off with Bill Bass in the 70s. And he had a case where obviously the estimation of time since deposition or time since burial was of critical importance. And he realized that there had not been any controlled studies on the decomposition process. So he started that facility at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And from there, that facility grew and grew. And then really at the time of the Casey Anthony case, where we had experts from the University of Tennessee and their training come here to Florida to estimate time since death, we really started to realize that we needed our own facility. And in fact, it was shortly thereafter that I had approached this university to start such a facility.
So it was that Casey Anthony case that kind of put the light bulb on that we need to study it here in Florida.
Absolutely. It's not splitting atoms to realize that in the mountains of Tennessee that you have different flora, different fauna, different weather, the mean annual rainfall, and that even the difference between Tampa and our own Naples can be quite drastic when you go 200 miles south of Pasco County.
And there's nothing else this far south?
There isn't.
I mean, there are two in Texas, and they might have maybe some similarities to Florida, but I don't.
The facilities in Texas are amazing. They do lots of wonderful work. But this subtropical and wet environment that we have here in Florida with these very sandy soils and even how prolific fire ants are in our soils affect the insects that are feeding on the human remains, which can skew our estimates of time since death if we're comparing our case to those outside of our region or outside of our state.
So you were pulling for one of these near in our area?
I was, yes.
Are you still hoping for that, even though there's one going into Tampa? But as you mentioned, there's room for more study even further south.
Absolutely. It would be my dream to have one here and then work with Aaron Kemmerly up in Pasco County and then compare our data to really show that 200 miles can make a difference.
So how many decomposing corpses make a farm? I mean, do you have to have – how many active decompositions do you have happening in a given farm?
At the times that I have been on at the Anthropological Research Facility at University of Tennessee, Knoxville, there have probably been 25 sets of human remains on the surface at one time. I'm sure they've probably had maybe twice that many or maybe less.
I'm sure it varies.
Yeah, it varies, definitely.
So why do you think there are so few body farms? Why do you think there's such pushback?
I think it has to do with fear of our own mortality. And here in the United States, we keep the dead very far away from us. And we will memorialize them in a wake, perhaps, or in funeral homes and in cremation urns or in cemeteries. But when it comes to knowing that you have those human remains a block away from you and that there's science being done on them, that can scare people, make them realize that their own deaths could be forthcoming.
Could be involving fire ants.
And could be involving fire ants. And so it's sort of not in my own backyard.
Are there other factors, though? I mean, there was one in Texas that was moved because of concerns about circling vultures, and it was near an airport. So they were worried about that. So they ended up moving it away from the airport. Are there concerns like scavengers coming around, or are there concerns about odor?
I think there are definitely concerns about odor. I know when we were in the planning stages for our facility, everything was going to be subterranean. Because in Florida, digging, at least in the areas that I've worked, has been very easy. So, and with these sandy karst soils, the holes can be very deep. And so it was our plan to have everything buried, which would automatically cut down on the smell. But I think the fear of the odor is right there in people's minds. And then I also think, sure, the fear of attracting different types of scavengers. But all of these facilities have very tall fences. They usually have concertina wire around the tops. Usually these facilities are large so that what's in the facility as far as scavengers stays inside and what's outside doesn't necessarily come in. So you have to think that this breeds a whole nother type of bias.
Yeah.
Because we're controlling essentially the flux of all the different animals that benefit from the process of decomposition.
Yeah, it would have to be a lot of acreage in order to be able to contain the natural predator – or not predators, scavengers that are going to be in the area.
Absolutely. And that's why I think taking a facility like that, an outdoor research facility – and focusing on things like STEM education, where we can look at the chemical breakdown of the process of decomposition, where we could look at maybe even a decompositional fluid transport through our own groundwater, which we are using in cemeteries all over the county and state. There is a lot to be learned from the process that doesn't necessarily have to go right to solving a case, but helps science in general. And then to have it as a location where we can safely train people who want to do CSI, who want to be detectives, who want to work in funeral homes, where we can get them exposed to the process of decomposition and how you collect the various lines of evidence that are there.
It's learning by doing. And, you know, it's I can't believe that nobody really even studied this until the 70s and 80s. I mean, it just didn't get...
Well, it's not, as my mentor once told me, it's not the work of gentlemen and gentleladies back then. It was something that people had to do, but nobody talked about it. And today, thankfully, we have such a love of science in this community, especially, that to talk about these various lines of evidence has been pretty easy to do.
And while there is the heebie-jeebie factor, you know, it's kind of the stuff of nightmares, or really you could write a great novel, a horror novel about it. But tell me what kind of real scientific gains have come from studying real-time decomposition. What kind of gains have been made in forensic science because as a result of this?
There have been gains in trying to predict how far human remains will scatter given a specific time period. There have been gains in my own work through meta-analysis where I have seen 20 years ago when I was with Bill Maples, he would say that we would have skeletonized remains in Florida within a week to 10 days. In my own experience here in Southwest Florida, I've had skeletonized remains in 3.5 to 4 days.
Really? Something gets all the way down to a skeleton?
All the way down to a skeleton. Greasy, not dry, but... cutting the time in half from what my mentor had originally trained me.
And that's because based on analysis from more northern body farms?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And his own experience in Gainesville.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So just this much further south, that time is cut in half in some instances.
Absolutely.
So we are talking about forensic scientists and how they come to understand decomposition of human bodies through the use of body farms. And there's a new one coming to Florida soon. We're talking with forensic scientist and professor Dr. Heather Walsh Haney. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So we're talking a little bit about how Florida differs from where other existing body farms are because we have the humidity, we have the really hot weather. We never have things freeze. Can our conditions be recreated in a way that is holistic as far as looking at what happens in Florida versus other places? Or does it just really have to happen in Florida?
There have been studies in controlled environments by soil scientists and biochemists where they have created a tank of sorts and they have used the same types of soils and they've tried to grow the same types of plants and they've placed piglets in these tanks and then looked at the super controlled environment just on the process of liquefaction and decomposition. So to sort of set those baselines. But in essence, every crime scene is different. Every environment is unique. There are so many variables that we really need to have these facilities in specific regions within states rather than just one per state or one per region of the country.
And we were talking a little bit about the soil. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading up on this, it sounds like there is a lot of study that's going towards looking at the soil and the liquids and the enzymes and the I don't want to say protein, but the
volatile
bacteria,
fatty acids.
Yeah, all that gets into the soil. And then the soil is what's being used to determine the time of death.
Yes. So
how does that work in Florida versus other soils? I mean, I think if you have a clayey, water retaining kind of a soil, that would be different from our sandy soil.
Absolutely. Arpad Vass is one of the preeminent researchers in soil science as it relates to the processes of decomposition. But Florida soils, especially with the percolation, so to speak, of our groundwater and its movement of the groundwater with our rains makes keeping and locating the decompositional fluids within our soils that have very little clay very difficult. And I don't know of a controlled study, actually, that's done it.
Yeah, I think it would be very mobile, considering the way that water shifts, especially during rainy season.
Absolutely.
And like you said, the scatter factor.
Mm-hmm.
We have a caller on the line. This is Luke calling from Fort Myers. Luke, what would you like to ask?
Hi there. My name is Luke. I was just wondering what the process you have to do to volunteer yourself to be part of one of these body farms, in case you die.
Okay, that's a great question.
It is. Many people don't realize, but we have an ever-growing human body donation here at Florida Gulf Coast University. So we have about 50 individuals over the last 12 years that donated their remains for forensic anthropological analysis. And if you'd like to do so, you would have to get some forms. And you can email me at the FGCU email address, hwalsh@fgcu.edu, to get those forms. And then you would make sure that your legal next of kin knew of your want to have your remains donated. And then you have to make arrangements with the funeral home because you would have to cover transportation of your remains from the funeral home to Florida Gulf Coast University. And one of the things that's so unique about our human remains donation is that I have families actually who come and visit the skeletonized remains of their loved ones, and that we want to know as much about the family and the decedent, the donee, as the family and that person are willing to tell us, so that we know personal stories, we know overall health status, and if at some point the family decides that they'd like to have the skeletonized remains back at their cost, we can have the remains returned to the family, to the legal next of kin.
Well, that's kind of interesting. It's not just checking the box on the back of your driver's license.
It is not just checking the box on the back of your driver's license. There is a bit of a procedure, yes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Once forensic scientists discover something about decomposition in some part of the country, how is that information shared so that researchers or investigators can know what kind of things they can expect given different circumstances? For example, say a forensics person in Florida might not study a lot of freezing temperatures, but if a corpse were put in a deep freeze before being dumped, I mean, would that present differently, and how would they become aware of that?
In Florida, we have been very progressive and proactive in the training of law enforcement and medical examiners. And through the medical examiner system, they have richly been able to reach out to universities and to various experts to help them fill in the gaps of that knowledge. The other part of it is that I myself teach at the National Forensic Academy, and that law enforcement is trained in these different methods of data analysis, so they know what to ask for to help in their case.
Mm-hmm. And maybe because my mind's informed by pop culture a little bit too much, but I don't think I'm alone when I'm saying that I think almost exclusively of criminal investigations when it comes to forensic science. Are there non-criminal aspects that are studied in any of these situations, like osteology, anthropology, any kind of historically significant finds?
Sure. In my own work, I have worked with the Bureau of Archaeological Research all over the state of Florida to evaluate prehistoric and historic remains. I've worked in Fiji with my colleague Sharon Jones as part of a National Science Foundation grant where we looked at evidence of cannibalism in ancient Fijians. So as a forensic anthropologist, my training is human skeletal anatomy and how we humans change through time and over space, how our own unique environments and then at a population level help manifest on the skeleton. So I have to be able to read you as an individual, but know how you're a bigger part of the puzzle.
It's really such a big picture.
It is a big picture.
I mean, it's not just what happened in the last 60 days to this the skeletal remains, but it's going all the way back. Line of study is really vast.
It's vast because injuries that happen to the bone in life, let's say you have a broken arm from falling off your bicycle in the teens or on a skateboard or rollerblades or something, and then that arm heals, and then as part of your death event, you break your arm, and then as part of the postmortem interval, scavengers have visited your body, or perhaps you were impacted by a flail mower or something like that. We have to be able to understand how bone reacts and changes and bends and breaks in all of those different environments as a forensic anthropologist to parse out and understand the timing of those injuries, to give that information to the medical examiner and law enforcement so they can use all those other lines of evidence to help solve the case.
This kind of just reminds me back to pop culture about bones. And the show Bones, which mm-hmm. you've consulted with. How realistic are these shows?
My experience was that the writers worked diligently to use the most current science and bring it into the show. And I would talk to them about current articles. I would send them the articles. They would come back with more questions about that particular line of evidence. And sure, at the end of the day, it had a very strong artistic component. But they were taking the science seriously to get there.
And then they crunched it into a one-hour segment.
Absolutely.
So what happens in an hour probably takes several weeks or months.
Yes.
Do you like having people being so curious about what you do, even if it is kind of a sped-up version of reality? Do you like that people kind of are almost, I don't want to say armchair forensic analysis people, but I mean, do you like people having that kind of curiosity?
I love it because at its nut, to be a scientist is to be curious. And if I ever lose that tether to the people around me to appreciate their curiosity and how novel this field can be to them, then I will lose the ability to answer questions in my own scientific endeavor. So I don't mind the curiosity at all.
So what got you interested in studying forensics?
Well, my family had ties to law enforcement. My grandfather was Walter R. Walsh. He was our country's oldest living FBI agent until a few years ago and was with the Bureau before it was even called the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He was a Marine Corps colonel as well as a coach of the Olympic shooting team. And then my father was also a federal agent and investigator. So I had that law enforcement side to my life growing up, but I also, through my mother in the maternal line, I had a love of museums and reading, and I became a bit of an armchair anthropologist. I thought I would be more of a Margaret Mead type, and so I studied with an anthropologist by the name of Marvin Harris as an undergrad, and I was taking another undergrad class, and Bill Maples came in, and he was talking about his work on the Gainesville Ripper, the serial killer case, and he was yet he would talk about Ted Bundy, his work on those cases, and then talk about the Romanovs, Francisco Pizarro, Medgar Evers. And I thought, that is what I want to do. I want to evaluate human skeletal remains to look at crimes in the past and today.
That's really intriguing.
Thank you.
And then we mentioned earlier how important it is to pinpoint the time of death. How accurate is that pinpointing? Are you getting it like within 10 minutes or within like an hour or a day?
As a forensic anthropologist, we can get to days, weeks, months, or years. But hopefully with facilities like USF, we might, you know, bring that interval down. But remember, we, using science, want to be more accurate rather than precise. So as we're writing our reports and we're crunching our numbers, you're going to see wider intervals more so than narrow. Now, the field of forensic entomology tends to be able to get down to days, whereas we would pick up on weeks, months, or years as the anthropologist. And then the pathologist will look at things like blood cooling and the stiffening of joints and get down to minutes and hours and days perhaps after death. So it's really a whole team of analysts having specialties that allows for the estimation of time since deposition or time since death.
So the state's set to give more than $4 million for the project. And I'm wondering, why does it cost so much to study decomposing bodies in a field?
Well, that's interesting. I think my proposal that we gave to FGCU was about $40,000. So it was primarily for fencing for the facility. But I think the unique aspect for USF is that they are building classrooms. There are salaries that are going in to help with the running of the facility. So, you know, that's a much larger image, much larger budget when you're talking about those aspects.
Yeah, that does add up to the cost. And then an indoor-outdoor situation too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who would use this kind of a facility? The one up there, is that going to be mainly just for students or law enforcement?
Well, what's nice about that facility is they want to do STEM training, so that'll necessarily involve students. They want to reach out to law enforcement and human remains detector dogs. So those officers and special interest officers will train there, as well as, I'm sure, medical examiners from around the state and around the country will go.
Mm-hmm. So the bodies that are used in these farms, are these always from people who've signed up before they died?
For the plan that I had put together and working with the State Anatomical Board, the person had to specifically say that they wanted to be put in our outdoor decompositional facility. My hope is that the same process in place at USF. I'm sure it is.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say to someone who's interested in this science? I mean, it's really fascinating talking to you about it, and it's also fun to watch on TV, which is more artistic and dramatic. What's the reality like of studying this?
The reality is that it takes a long time, and you really have to have the support of your family to make it through the studies. I responded to Ground Zero on September 11. And I knew I was putting my studies into action. And it wasn't until really that day, though I had used my skills with Dr. Maples and Dr. Falsetti for unique cases, knowing that I had to tell my family that I was going to be leaving for at least 2 weeks as part of the federal mass fatalities response team, and that really what I knew was going to be put to the test right then. I was very nervous. I was a little scared. And being able to talk it through with my husband, actually, helped me not only get through that incident, but helped me continue on through all my studies. It's expensive and time-consuming. And then when you're a practitioner, honestly, it doesn't change. The day before yesterday, I was in Jacksonville. I consult for the Panhandle, for the middle of the state, and for the Keys. So my graduate students and I drive all over the state, not to mention the international work that I do.
And you're consulting on real crimes?
Oh, absolutely.
Does this have an emotional impact on you, though? I mean, is it hard to see some of the things that you see?
Oh, it's always hard. There's not a case that I have gone on, even when I've worked with wildlife officers, that it has not affected me. I don't know why in the end I am able to still sleep at night and love life and love my children, but it is never lost on me with every case that the person in front of me is someone's husband, wife, son, mother, grandfather. That is never lost on me. And I work hard to help find out, tease out as much evidence as possible to help law enforcement, the medical examiner, solve cases.
And I think it's really interesting that you allow family members who have a family member who is in the program with you here at FGCU to allow them to come in and see that you're working with this person's body with the utmost respect and the knowledge that that donation is passing on.
Absolutely. This idea of transparency is so important to me and really has become more important in forensic anthropology. When my mentor was first in the field, we really sort of stayed behind the curtain and we dealt with the dead. Because my original work was as a cultural anthropologist, I have never thought twice about communicating with family and talking about difficult aspects of death and dying in the process of science, the process of living. And so to me, it was a no-brainer that I did not want to do forensics behind a curtain and that through the process of donation, I could talk to families more. Now, I have had some donations where the spouses say, love you, love the program. Don't call us again.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's right. Different.
Everybody's different. But I've had more that have said, we really feel like we're part of FGCU and we're part of the program.
And part of people's education going
Absolutely.
Forward. Involving the living in the study of the dead is really new. I mean, before it was a very lonely profession, I imagine.
Absolutely, it was. Oh, my students, whether undergrad or grad, get so much out of communicating and talking with the families. It has been amazing to watch them grow as academics and as people, dealing with people who are mourning. I mean, we've had folks come in and, you know, we have the skeleton laid out and someone will just touch very gently the forehead of her mother or aunt and you see, you know, tears there. And that they know that she's well taken care of, but you know that she's having memories, cherished memories of being with this person when she was alive.
It's interesting how much can also just be learned by watching the body farm, like the body is decomposing at the body farm, how it leaches into the soil and what different kind of soils do. So things like this, while they might kind of give people the creeps or whatever, it's what you're telling me is pretty vital, not only to criminal investigations, but also just general knowledge and science.
And I think if we got away from the name, the body farm.
Yeah, body
farm. Patricia Cornwell, I wish she'd never coined that term.
Yeah, outdoor forensic facility.
That's what I use because body farm connotes such horrible visuals for folks, and it doesn't need to be like that.
A couple books and movies, I think, that went along those lines.
Yes.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank you for coming in. Our guest, Dr. Heather Walsh Haney, forensic scientist and FGCU professor. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us about the outdoor forensic training facilities. It's been very interesting.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Gulf Coast Live is produced by Julie Glenn and Matthew Smith. It's directed by Richard Chin Kui, with technical help from John Davis. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.